Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Rights Radio, your independent voice. I'm Dr. Joyce Starr. Rights Radio is brought to you by starpublications.com, that's star with two R's, and by rightsradio.com, where consumer, economic, homeowner, health, and security rights have a permanent URL. If you're confronting a serious condo or homeowner problem, visit starpublications.com for our homeowner rights defense kit and for our new book, Secondhand Smoke Crimes, How to Stop Neighbors from Poisoning You, Your Family, and Pets. Today we're honoring Dr. Rosianna Means, founder of womenofmeans.org. Women of Means provides quality health care, education, and advocacy for women and children in homeless shelters. Teams of volunteer doctors and staff nurses provide free, patient-centered medical care to women and children in and around the Boston area. Dr. Means is a practicing internist who specializes in women's health. She believes that society's neediest women and children deserve accessible and compassionate health care. And coming up is an anniversary event, the 10th anniversary event, which is called Taking It to the Streets. The phone number, if you want to get involved, is 781-239-0290. Welcome, Rosianna. It's a pleasure to have you on our show.
Thank you, Dr. Starr. I appreciate this.
You've described yourself and your team as homeless doctors. Can you tell us what that means?
Yes, we are a team of volunteer doctors here in the Boston area. We're the largest volunteer physician group in Massachusetts, and we go into shelters for women and children, day shelters, overnight shelters, battered women's shelters, family shelters, with our medical kits, and we provide care in the shelters, but we don't work for the shelters. We don't own a place in the shelters. We are a mobile unit. And we go from place to place just like the women do. So we are virtually homeless doctors ourselves, helping the women on the streets and off the streets in the places where they feel safest, helping them get the medical care they need without any barriers or red tape.
You have an extraordinary background. Can you share the number of years that you've spent in this arena?
Thank you. I've been a doctor in Boston for about 30 years, and I've been taking care of homeless folks for about 20 years. And 10 years ago, I started Women of Means as a way to give the women the means to move forward with their health. That's the play on the word. And the target was women who were very vulnerable and needed to have doctors in the front lines, not having to go to the hospitals and health centers to negotiate complicated and confusing systems, but to have us go to them. So the last 30 years I've been a doctor, the last 20 I've been in the shelters, and the last 10 I've been directing all my energies to helping the most poor and vulnerable women in Massachusetts.
Now, you've written on your website, again, womenofmeans.org, that women head up 90% of the families who use shelters. Is that true? Is that an accurate description?
Yes. The predominant head of household for single families are women. And most women become homeless through economic inequalities. A lot of people think of the homeless as mentally ill or substance abusing or other kind of negative, stigmatizing characteristics, but most women who become homeless are women who have either stayed home to raise their children and then get left behind and don't have another paycheck to help them sustain their rent, or they've been abandoned, or they've been divorced, or they've come up with some kind of medical catastrophe in their homes, and they end up on the streets with their children, no place to go, and having to go to the family shelters. And the majority of those women are single heads of household.
So do we have the wrong impression, really, of shelters? You're saying that we do, actually, that our typical assumption is that it's probably men more than women, except for, of course, domestic violence shelters.
Well, yes, the majority of homeless are still men, but a third of the homeless are women or women with their children, and that's slowly rising. The number of women and women heads of household with families is slowly rising. It's the largest subgroup. And what we've seen here in Massachusetts is an explosion in the number of families who are experiencing homelessness. And at the same time, the closure of family shelters and families having to be forced into motel rooms at the taxpayers' expense in order to keep their families going. It's not a good solution to a long-term problem.
How many of them are torn apart? The children are taken away?
That's a very good question. And I don't know the answer to that. Many women, when they are facing homelessness, they would rather have to go it alone themselves if they can, if their children are not too young, and avail themselves of what they call the single adult shelters. And if they do that, they have to let their children be raised by another family member, or worst case scenario, give up their children to foster care. If they do that, then the difficulty of getting their children back at the end of their homelessness is very, very huge. In very difficult situations, a woman who is running away from a batterer, if she can't find a domestic violence shelter to stay in, sometimes has to make the painful choice to leave the children with the batterer in order to save her own life. And what we have in this country is a large majority of animal shelters, more animal shelters for animals than we have domestic shelters for women. So this terrible choice that women have to make is not at all unusual.
And about 3,000 in domestic violence shelters in Massachusetts?
I don't know the exact numbers because those are kept secret in terms of domestic violence shelters, but there are 25,000 homeless in Massachusetts and 8,000 families, about 3,000 homeless women individuals in Boston alone. And our program serves about 2,500 women in Boston. And the one great thing about our program is that we don't charge a dime for our services. We don't take any taxpayer money to do the work. These are all volunteer doctors who are attending level, senior level doctors who donate their time on a consistent and regular basis for at least a year. We find that they like to stay longer than a year, but we doctors donate about $500,000 a year in professional services as a way to give back to the community. So we were doing community service long before it became a political buzzword. The doctors that do this just want to do this because it's the right thing to do and because we want to be role models for future generations of caregivers.
But when they donate that time, does that mean they've taken that year off of their normal rounds and work, or are they dividing their time? How does it go?
Yeah. No, they take it out of their own personal time. The doctors have other jobs that they do to support their families, but they give up their own time in order to give back to the women in the shelters. In some cases, they give up time in clinical time that they could be paid for in order to do this because they feel so strongly that this is the right thing to do. And we're really proud of these doctors. They represent multiple specialties. We have medicine, pediatrics, family medicine, emergency medicine, dermatology, and psychiatry. And as I say, they're asked to commit for 1 year once a week or once a month or once every other week, whatever their schedule permits. But we have found over the 10 years that once they come on board and start volunteering, almost none of them leave. We have doctors who have been here for 6, 8, 9 years who continue to volunteer their services because they get very close to the women and they just want to make a difference and be able to give back.
It's an incredible program. Is it also duplicated in other cities?
We have a very unique program. We would like to duplicate it in other cities. We are very replicable. At this time, we're very small because we don't charge for our services. We rely completely on donations and foundation grants. We've never taken money from the government because we haven't been big enough to have the staff to do the kind of reporting that the government requires on some of their grants. we're hoping to change that this year. Now that we've gone our 10th year, we'd like to scale up and be able to go to more shelters, more cities, and ultimately replicate across the country. It's a very simple model because there's very little overhead. Our administrative costs are only about 10% of our entire budget, which is very small because, again, we're not paying doctors' salaries.
But how are you coordinating all this? One would assume it takes a large staff to coordinate all these people.
It does take a lot of coordination. And I have a medical director, Dr. Deb Blasey-Martin, who runs the schedules for all the volunteer doctors. And in addition, we have a very active program of medical education for nursing students and medical residents here in the Boston hospitals. In fact, we're the only program in the area that puts medical students and nursing students together in the same clinical setting. A lot of programs, when they want to do community placements, they have a placement for the nurses and a placement for the doctors, but they don't really meet each other until they meet in the wards in that hierarchy where doctors give the orders and nurses have to check them off. We offer our medical students and residents the opportunity to see the patients from another perspective, another professional's perspective. So Dr. Blasey-Martin, in addition to arranging the volunteer schedules, also organizes the schedules for the students and residents. And we have now over 150 medical students and medical residents and nursing students that come through our program every year. So these are young people who are at the beginning of their careers. They're trying to decide what kind of professional they want to be, and we're giving them a chance to see medicine in a very unique setting and to understand that they can make a huge difference if they come out of their comfort zone and go to where the women are and take care of them on different terms, basically. Not under the managed care rules that affect all of us, but taking care of somebody in a place where they feel safe and they're having their survival needs met, but they are just too traumatized to make it to the hospital or the health center to get the care they need.
And one of the things that we discussed on the phone is that an increasing number of these women are older, and they were people of means. They had a way to support themselves. They had professions, and now they're lost. They've lost everything.
That is exactly right. It's a terrible tragedy. In the last 6 weeks, I've met three women over 70. In fact, 8% of the women that we take care of are over 70 years old. They were not mentally ill. They were not using substances. They're not ex-convicts. They're women who have lost their homes to foreclosure or to death of a spouse, other economic problems, and they find themselves at the twilight years of their lives sleeping on a cot in a homeless shelter and finding us to take care of their broken skin or their heart disease or their diabetes, and they have no other way of connecting to the health care system except coming to us, and then we very happily will connect them and get them into the care that they need. But this is a huge growing demographic with enormous repercussions for all of us.
And what are some of those repercussions?
If you have chronic disease, heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, asthma, chronic lung disease, any of those kind of conditions, and they're not monitored closely and kept in check, then that person's going to end up in the emergency room sicker, being admitted to the hospital sicker. And if they're poor and can't pay their bills, then we people who are paying our insurance premiums are going to be affected that way. So the cost of care is going to go up, and it's going to have repercussions for those of us who are paying our insurance premiums, that our premiums are going up. And God knows, all of us are suffering super high premiums now, and the threat of more double-digit increases is in the future. So what we're trying to do is be proactive and preventive and take care of some of these chronic diseases and these very ill people, keep them out of the emergency rooms, keep them stable, get them into primary care and preventive care, and get them into housing as soon as possible so that they can get back on their feet.
Rosanna, we're coming to the end of our time, and I want to thank you. It's been a great insight into the plight of women in general, and homeless women and elderly women who are now finding themselves homeless. I hope you'll come back.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be on your show, and I appreciate all the help that you've given me and all the help that your listeners can give us. We are a small organization, but we we appreciate all the help that we can get.
womenofmeans.org. Visit the website and lend a hand. This is Dr. Joyce Starr with Rights Radio. Bye-bye.